Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Right after 2021 began, the Agriculture Department's chief economist, Seth Meyer, projected that farm income this year would drop from 2020, but happily for everybody, he was wrong.
Maybe I was being a little overly cautious at the beginning of the year.
After all, government payments to farmers were set to be cut by over 40% this year, but demand for ag products has been very strong, pushing most commodity prices up and net farm income up 23% from 2020. Now, for 2022, Seth Meyer is telling producers,
we might ease off of what have been pretty good prices. Expect a little bit of a softening on cash receipts.
And he says expect costs for fertilizers, fuel, and other inputs to continue very high, eating away at margins. However, because 2021 has been so profitable,
you're in a good position to weather what are going to be those increasing input costs in the new year.
This is Gary Crawford, Washington.
This is Agriculture Today.
2022 will bring a new reality.
That's Blue Putnam, chief economist for the CME Group.
Inflation shot upwards in late 2021 in the post-pandemic economy with myriad supply disruptions. New COVID variants have the potential to cause more supply chain issues.
But there is no expectation that the significant federal support that the ag industries received over the past 4 years will continue in 2022. That, according to a recent FarmDoc Daily report from the University of Illinois, ag economist Krista Swanson, who says the payments that were intended to offset losses associated with trade policy, natural disasters, and the pandemic have averaged almost $20 billion per year since 2018. But improved crop prices across the board for corn, cotton, sorghum, soybean, and wheat, implying positive returns for grain producers, but record high input prices may pressure the potential for many farmers. In the report, Swanson asked whether conditions that justify additional ad hoc support for U.S. farmers will surface again in 2022, or will the existing farm safety net of commodity and crop insurance programs be sufficient? Now, this question may drive the debate in the new year as Congress begins the process of writing the next farm bill, especially on the heels of unparalleled federal spending over the same period, potentially forcing tighter budgetary concerns. Well, the effects of the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP, continue to show positive results in rural communities. That's according to data recently released by the American Bankers Association. 2020 Community Reinvestment Act requires banks with more than $1.3 billion in assets to report data on small business, small farm, and community development lending. With 687 banks reporting, there was almost 10% increase in loans originated. Those small farm loan originations fell nearly 2% in 2020 compared to 2019. Now, more than 40% of the reported small business loans and 56% of the farm loans were made to businesses with less than $1 million in annual revenue. In addition, 621 banks reported a 52% increase in lending activity focused on community development, totaling nearly $169 billion in 2020. While the new year may provide new headwinds for beef producers, that according to Matt Clark, a senior industry analyst with American Ag Credit. The beef sector ending 2021 much better than the year before, thanks to robust beef demand both here at home and in export markets. Now, Clark also explains that the consumer's willingness to pay for beef products improved alongside higher retail prices. Looking ahead, however, he sees drought conditions, feed costs, labor costs, and an increase in general input costs tagged by rising inflation to cause concern for the industry. But some of these concerns, especially drought, will lead to a slight reduction in the beef-cow herd over the next 2 years. So if demand can continue to grow, Clark concludes, the decline in the beef herd may help support higher cattle prices and provide some offset to higher input prices. It's Agriculture Today. Did you know that the world-famous Café Du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like a Café Du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
One of those things that is very hard to model from an economic standpoint is really the damage from an invasive species on two different crops.
Danny Munch is an associate economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation on crops affected by feral hogs.
So one of the best approaches that's been taken to this, it's about 5 years old, so the estimate is it's quite a bit low, but it's still the best number we have, and that tracks six different crops, which is corn, soybeans, sorghum, rice, peanuts, and wheat. And that the study was in only a few southern states. That was Texas, Arkansas, Missouri, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Florida. And it found over $190 million in direct crop losses just from feral hogs and just for those commodities. So obviously that's a very conservative estimate because there are feral hogs impacting producers far outside the range of those states listed, as well as far outside of the number of crops that were studied, including pasture and rangeland. That's a big issue. And a lot of states where you have, you know, pasture range, grazed cattle-calf operations that rely on, you know, your hay and your natural perennial grasses to kind of sustain themselves. So when you have feral hogs coming in and disrupting your pasture land, you now have to rely on a feed source that's elsewhere. So that increases your operational costs and really limits your land value as well.
So how are landowners and producers attempting to manage the problem?
The primary two approaches as of now to really manage feral hogs are using traps as well as shooting on site with traditional, you know, firearms. There's a few other ways. You know, in Texas, they have some of the largest populations and they kind of use aerial hunting techniques. And a lot of that is also sponsored by some of the state wildlife services and APHIS as well. There's a bunch of other research being done on other tactics that can be taken to reduce feral hog populations, such as looking into ways to reduce fertility and just other sorts of science-based approaches to managing populations. And granted, all these, like, if a farmer or rancher is taking these steps on their own, it's very costly to them. And some of the recent studies showed, you know, each producer in Georgia is averaging over $2,000 a year in expenditures just trying to protect their property from feral hogs. And, you know, that calculates in millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in all the states affected if we kind of add it up. And to not really be making a big dent, it's a very costly over time.
So how could they be managed?
One of the best approaches so far has definitely been this National Feral Swine Damage Management Program. And that really allows APHIS to step in with wildlife services and use targeted management approaches to kind of reduce hog populations. And that's taken out tens of thousands of hogs in you know, agriculturally and environmentally important areas. So funding for those programs is important, as well as at the state level. A lot of these states know the best way to really approach some of these populations. A big issue that we want to bring up is there are hunting businesses across impacted states that have kind of popped up initially in a way to reduce populations. But as, you know, as some of those businesses catch on, they actually work to kind of incentivize the preservation of hogs, of feral swine, right? If you remove the entire population, then you don't have any sort of business prospects moving forward to sustain the hunting business. So Farm Bureau supports full eradication. All of our members support full eradication. So that sort of preservation and incentivization of preservation should be eliminated, as well as any sort of illegal trafficking of feral hogs at different locations around the state or across state lines as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
What is in the infrastructure bill? So formally, it's the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. It's also commonly referred to as the Bipartisan Infrastructure Framework Bill, or abbreviated or acronym by BIF.
Krista Swanson is an economist at the University of Illinois on the recently passed infrastructure bill. What's in it for ag?
In this bill, there's not really much in the way of farm aid, direct farm aid. But the aim of the provisions in the bill is to revitalize rural areas and improve transportation systems, which is, of course, important to those of us in agriculture. We all know how important our transportation pathways are, not only in getting the commodities that we produce to their, you know, next destination, but also the inputs that we need to produce our agricultural commodities, getting those in to where they need to go as well. So this was a $1.2 trillion plan, and it was signed into law on November 15th. And about half, a little over half of that $1.2 trillion, $650 billion of that, was pre-allotted funding for highways and other scheduled projects. And then a little under half, $550 billion, was new spending. And that new spending was the projects in within the new spending can be categorized into two groups. About 52% was for surface transportation projects. So this would include things like roads and bridges and railways, public transit, ports and waterways, airports, among other things that fit into that category. But those are some of the really big ones. And then about 48% is core infrastructure projects. These are things like energy and power and broadband, water systems, western water situations. So out west, this is a bigger deal for farmers in the western region of the United States than it is for us here in the Midwest. But there's a lot of they have issues with water shortages and water storage there. And there was actually a chunk of money in this bill that was dedicated specifically to that region. So that's good news for farmers in those areas. And then some environmental remediation projects. Those are the types of things that are part of that core infrastructure group. So that kind of gives you an idea of how this new spending is being split up.
Talks about traditional infrastructure.
Improving that ag transportation network is definitely important. There are a lot of roads and bridges that are in need of major repairs and replacements, and this funding does. The funding for that includes those types of projects. $110 billion was allocated to roads and bridges, and that's 10%, about 10% of the entire bill. So that is a huge amount going to those pathways. And then railways were allocated $66 billion, and ports and waterways $17 billion. So you can see the amount of money going to those pathways that I already talked about, you know, being so important to agriculture. Another interesting provision related to what I'm calling the Ag Transportation Network is a provision to exclude livestock haulers from normal trucking hour limitations if they're within 150 miles of their destination. So we know that there's a trucker shortage right now, or maybe a shortage of truckers to keep all the transportation needs moving. And for those who are livestock farmers, this is an important provision related to transportation as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
Now is the time to sell. Demand for used equipment is high, and Purple Wave Auction can help you reach the largest community of online buyers. Whether you have a single item or an entire fleet, Purple Wave Auction offers a hassle-free way to sell your equipment. Visit purplewave.com. Straight, simple, sold.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
See, that's a tough question because there's a lot of things going on.
USDA's chief meteorologist is Mark Brusberg.
I think that the folks in California watching that state's snowpack and some of the neighboring states have reason to be optimistic. The snowpack, even though it's early in the season, is pretty close to normal. Last year, they had an abysmal year with snow cover. Not only did they get below normal snowfall, but it melted early because of the spring warming. So they're in better shape. On the other hand, the drought really hasn't gotten a lot better. As a matter of fact, I think over the last month, the drought has actually intensified over some of the southern plains, and a lot of the hard red winter wheat went into dormancy, not that well established, and, you know, so there is some concern there still. So parts of the West have reason for optimism that they might not see a harsh drought entering the spring. Other folks are feeling left out right now, especially on the Great Plains. So it's sort of been some haves and have-nots. People in the Southwest and the Four Corners region, some of those reservoirs are still very low. Colorado River Basin is still suffering from really what's been classified as a mega drought. I mean, this is one of these droughts in the West that only happens maybe once every couple of centuries. So there's still a lot of concern.
And looks at South America.
South America is another interesting area to be watching right now. We are in the second year of a La Nina. Last year, for example, Brazil's corn crop did not do very well. And a lot of that was attributed to things that were caused by the La Nina. Last year, the rain season started later than usual in Brazil. They planted the soybeans later, and that made the second crop corn go in late. We didn't see that this year. So even though there's a La Nina and there has been a forecast for drought, we're not seeing all of the problems that they saw in South America last year. They are seeing dryness in the south. Now, you know, states in Brazil, Paraná, Rio Grande do Sul, are in the midst of, I guess, what I would characterize as a spring drought. But that's still just a small portion of their overall soybean and corn crop. So right now there's some problems in parts of Brazil, but they have a long season ahead of them. And like I said, everybody was expecting the La Nina to be devastating to Brazil and Argentina, and it hasn't been that bad yet over that big of an area. There's been some problems, but they haven't seen it. And keep in mind that people were expecting there to be another horrible drought in California this year because of the second year of La Nina. And they haven't seen that yet. It could dry out starting in January, and they could see problems, but they haven't seen it yet. So just goes to show you that if you have something in an outlook, even though it's a normal climate feature, like a La Nina or an El Nino, you can't always say for certain what's going to happen. So that's one of the challenges of watching the United States and really the world, which is what we do here.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ring in the new year with savings at South Plains Implement. Looking for a new ride? Get great deals and financing options across a wide selection of John Deere lawn equipment during the Winter Green Sales event. Have time to tackle repairs on harvest equipment? In-stock peanut and cotton harvest equipment parts 15% off. Ready to plow into planting season? South Plains Implement offering 15% off complete sets of tillage parts. Some restrictions apply. Offers end January 31st at South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022 is here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit Equinom.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
We have in the dry bulk market what is called the FFA market, the Freight Forward Agreement. And that is on the Baltic Exchange, and it is the equivalent, or is indeed the futures market in dry bulk freight, just like we have futures markets in the grain using the Chicago Board of Trade. If we go to the Baltic Exchange, there is a freight forward agreement futures market where different traders and players can buy and sell cargoes at an indexed rate.
That's ocean freight expert Jay O'Neill with O'Neill Commodity Consulting on what the term or acronym FFA means.
This year, we've seen the FFA contract for dry bulk cargo for Capesize exceed $65,000 per day. And in the spot market, it has exceeded $85,000 a day, daily higher rate. The all-time high in the FFA contract was back in May of 2008, at which time the FFA Capesize contract reached $300,000 per day, daily higher. So from even though we have risen up to $65,000, $85,000 a day in today's market, well, that's still quite a distance to go before we reach $300,000, which was the all-time high in 2008. Vessel owners, vessel operators, of course, are hoping that we may repeat 2008 and we may be able to see daily higher rates for Capesize vessels go over $100,000 and higher. We'll have to see if that wish comes true.
So what are the current shipping rates?
Current daily higher rates, as we just talked about, for Capesize vessels have been over $80,000 per day, daily higher rate, because a vessel is concerned about not how many dollars per ton am I going to make, but how many dollars per day am I going to earn for my vessel. And then you will notice the Panamax and Supermax vessels that we're using in the grain industry are trading at just under $40,000 per day. And this market daily higher rate fluctuates day to day in the market and in the futures market. And it's been running up or down $2,000 or $3,000 per week, higher or lower. But what is most significant is you will notice that there's a huge inverse that exists between the nearby market and the forward market. So those who need to purchase vessels to carry cargo are paying whatever they have to pay in the nearby market to get a vessel for next week or this month. But they're not so excited. They're not so much interested in buying and paying for freight 3 months out, 4 months out, 6 months out, and paying these high rates. They're also hopeful that rates may come down. So we have a very large inverse that exists right now, where the nearby market is very high, the deferred market is much lower. And the question is, will this inverse, will these high rates in the nearby markets walk forward and affect December, January, February, March of next year? Well, we don't know, but this certainly is an opportunity for risk management. Grain buyers, cargo buyers around the world who are concerned that this market may walk forward and remain high for some time to come have the opportunity to hedge themselves in the FFA, the Freight Forward Agreement markets in the Baltic Exchange, and you could go out and purchase a futures contract for the first quarter of next year at roughly $30,000 per day, and thereby use it as a hedge in case it becomes this high value walks forward and we're looking at much higher values as we get there.
It's Agriculture Today.
Oh, there's nothing like the sound of a new baby calf or the smell of fresh rain on a cotton crop. My friends at Capital Farm Credit share this excitement with agricultural and livestock producers. We want to be your lending partner. Whether you require operating funds for next year's crop or need to buy hay for your cattle, we have a loan that's right for you. Let us finance your operation. CapitalFarmCredit.com.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This has been a dramatic year for us on the trade front.
Ethan Lane is Vice President of Government Affairs with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
We are now exporting north of $10 billion a year in beef to foreign markets. The growth that we've seen in those markets has been absolutely unbelievable over the last couple of years. If we had held this call 2 or 3 years ago, China would not even have been a discussion point. That's now a $1 billion market for U.S. beef and continuing to grow. That's alongside robust numbers coming out of places like Japan and South Korea and Taiwan and Hong Kong, and a continued dialogue on opening up additional markets and access to places like the United Kingdom, which are going to just provide our producers more opportunities to move product out the door. That really helps with that conversation on expanding packing capacity. I know we're in a herd contraction right now. That's a natural part of the cattle cycle that's being exacerbated, obviously, by the horrible drought conditions that we're seeing in some parts of the country. But as we look towards the next few years, we want to see that growth continue. We want to see that capacity build so that we're in a position as an industry to keep the world provided with that protein that they love so much coming from the U.S. We know that when we go head to head with our competitors around the world in foreign markets, there is no competition. When we have a choice, when our beef is there to be chosen, they pick us every time. We want to make sure we keep providing that access and keep growing that footprint around the world for our producers to continue exporting that product.
And as we head into the new year, what's the thoughts on the administration's 30 by 30 plan?
Coming from the West, coming from my previous position running the Public Lands Council, anything that can be described the way they've described 30 by 30 is a reason for us to be extremely alarmed. There's no debate about that. I believe that what we've actually seen out of the administration so far probably is it falls a little bit short of the alarm that we've seen out in the country. They've put out a statement of principles. Basically, they've put out an assertion that they want to focus on working lands as part of the solution. They want to focus on local stakeholder input. Those are talking points that really come from our feedback into that process. The only way you're going to make something like this work is if you really listen closely to what works on the ground and recognize those uses that are in fact conservation uses. And I'm talking specifically about cattle production and grazing as a conservation use. I think that they're really trying to figure out now what they want out of that process, what counts as part of that 30%. I've heard different people say, gosh, it has to be all new business. It's got to be a whole new 30%. I know some people are under the impression that 30% has to be all federal acquisition. Those are not accurate characterizations of 30 by 30. And I'm not here to defend it, but I do think we need to make sure we're clear of what it is we're talking about and what it is we're focusing on. So far, the administration hasn't given us anything really to swing at as far as a policy proposal that we're opposed to. When they come out with those numbers, when they really are able to quantify what it is that they think needs to be preserved or conserved in order to hit that goal, and whether or not they're accurately counting us as part of that 30%, then we're going to have a much more detailed ability to engage on that issue. Personally, I don't think this is a winner for the White House either way. They're never going to placate the environmental community, especially the radical end of the environmental community, with anything that they do in this space. And anything they do that delegitimizes legitimate conservation uses like grazing is going to infuriate the user community. So I think this probably sounded like a great idea in January when they were putting ideas on the whiteboard. This is one they maybe should have workshopped a little more before they put it out the door as an executive order. And I think they're recognizing that now.
It's Agriculture Today.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cotton seed from AmeriCotton. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new BollGuard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cotton seed.
Take the guesswork out of preparing your cotton for harvest with NanoPro. Utilizing NanoPro's revolutionary nanoliquid technology, your harvest aids go to work faster and more efficiently, increasing leaf drop, reducing regrowth, and helping your cotton be ready when you are. Offering a 3-to-1 return on investment, you can't go wrong with NanoPro. Learn more or find your nearest dealer by calling Tracy Carrillo at 575-639-5110 or visit aquayield.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Development continues for a variety of biological controls for crop pests and disease utilizing living organisms, part of evolving innovations in agriculture. Jason Ward of Novozymes talks about one such innovation.
Products use beneficial bacteria to control disease in primarily vegetable crops.
In terms of how this bacteria combination controls disease,
first they do it by populating the leaf surface so that the diseases you want to control don't have a place to live. The other way that they work is they produce metabolites, which actually are antifungal in nature. So if disease does land on the leaf, then they repel that disease with these metabolites.
Meanwhile, USDA researcher Sean Steffen is among those developing a bioinsecticide to fight cranberry insect pest.
Two species together represent our nematode blend. We've shown that at relatively low rates, they confer really high percent kill rates for flea deals.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.